So let's dive deep. Let's do it. What if what you are about to hear could change your life forever? Inhale. Exhale. Set an intention. You are seen. You are heard. You are loved. This is The Deep Dive with Adam Roa.
What's up, Deep Divers? Thank you for joining me for another episode. My name is Adam Roa. Sitting across from me, Megan Zimmering, affectionately known as Z. And she's my first female friend, which we'll tell that story. We'll tell that story later. She is incredible. I love her dearly. She's also a badass ceremonialist and medicine woman and evolutionary astrologer and coach and so many things, having come from being a badass in sports marketing. Mm-hmm. And so we vibe out a lot because having the background of like grounded business person, mm-hmm. And also grounded martial artist. Mm-hmm. You were at Olympic level?
Yeah, I was training for the Olympics in Taekwondo. Yeah.
I mean, you're just an overall badass who could probably beat me up. So
I love, get one clean shot to the head.
Get
we'll
one,
see if it
one good. So, like, okay, I guess my wrestling, I'm like, yeah. We're just like this. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, right? Just don't catch my leg.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, you're one of my favorite people. You know that. And I am so excited that we get to now take a deep dive together.
Let's go deep.
And we're going to start by, let's just elephant in the room. You're dating a black man.
You're dating a black man.
That has been a huge topic of conversation.
Yeah.
In your life, in your family's life, and
yeah.
And in the collective right now.
That's right.
And you wrote a poem about it.
I did. Damn, we're going right in immediately.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Right. Because we're going to start with the art and also because it makes you incredibly uncomfortable and I don't want it hanging over your head like the anticipation throughout the entire thing.
All right.
And as a spoken word poet, I invite in spoken word poetry whenever possible. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be perfect for you to open us with a spoken word poem. What's it called?
It's called The White Girl That Likes Black Guys.
Great. And so we'll dive in with that and let that evolve into today's kind of conversation.
Amazing. Okay, so I'm nervous as fuck. Not only because of the content of the poem, but also because I just decided I was a spoken word artist like 2 weeks ago. And I think my first spoken word piece I read to you the last time you were in town. And since then I've written a couple more, which this is one of them. And it's been channeled in connection to the Jaguar Collective, which is a council series that I'll talk about a little bit later. This poem came in very clearly for me. And every time I've read it, I've actually only read it to about five humans so far. So the vulnerability of sharing my art in the first place, this like new medium, and the content of the poem is so tender and close to my heart because of the journey that I went on in dating interracially my whole life, and the men that I've been deeply in love with in multiple multi-year relationships from the time I've been 16 years old have been black. You know, I've dated interracially my whole life and they've been deep, profound relationships. And I've experienced a lot of judgment from the white community going to Rice University in Texas, where unfortunately racism was still very alive, from the black community as well. And from my own family with my Jewish ancestors and the lineage and the trauma that my people have incurred through the Holocaust. There's a tendency to operate from protection, which is ironic considering the similarity that I experience in all the different races and cultures that have experienced genocide, oppression, slavery, that there can tend to be a separative effect that perpetuates the original wound. So if we take the Holocaust, for example, in the case of my family, my grandparents' parents escaped the Holocaust. And so for them, that trauma touched so close to the bone. And from their genuine love for us and for their family, they expressed the love through a distorted lens, which took the form of fear and protection and enforcing that we had to marry Jewish, that you have to marry a Jewish man, or else you'll be disowned. And that was really painful for me. I thought for the first most of my life, actually, from 16 until almost 30, that I would have to choose between the love of my life and my family. I thought I would have to choose. And we've been through a lot of healing and come to a really beautiful place now. But yeah, this poem has been for me like a healing ceremony every time I've read it, just because it was such a painful journey that I went on for all those years, feeling like I was going to, I didn't know if I could really trust love, and I could always feel the love in coming from my family and the deep love in my relationships as well. And the separation just never made sense to me. So that's where this poem came from.
Ooh. And for everyone listening, I just want to speak to, like the vulnerability of sharing art and art that is so personal,
mm-hmm.
is a very real thing. And I know that people can relate to that. Even just like you invite someone to sing, it's mm-hmm. like sing. Mm-hmm. And what that can feel like, or dance, or, mm-hmm. you know, express yourself artistically. Mm-hmm. And for you, this being so new,
mm-hmm.
And being already diving right into a topic that's like, cause my first spoken word poetry mm-hmm. pieces were about what I was seeing in the world, like mm-hmm. water is life and, mm-hmm. and these things. Right. And stepping into a more personal, poetry experience was new, like since the breakup mm-hmm. with Azria, and really starting to write about that. Mm. And I think you've heard the one that I wrote, about like that breakup.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I just honor you and acknowledge you and the courage that you have to mm-hmm. also tell me that you wrote it. And then me go, you want to just do it on the podcast right now? Mm-hmm. And then you go, because that's what I love about you. And you just dive right in and mm-hmm. you're like, yeah, let's face that edge. And mm-hmm. I've called you forward before in mm-hmm. various ways. And here we are again.
We're all about those edge face-offs, aren't we? Expand beyond them. Yeah. So my heart's going a million miles a minute. So here's my heart. So this spoken word piece is called The White Girl That Likes Black Eyes. They looked at me like it's the whole of my identity. Look at her. It's the white girl that likes black guys. To the white guys off limits. She likes those other guys. We've seen it. And to the black girls rejected. She's taking our men. We expect it. And the white women, they're fine. But why do you want to go to the black club all the time? And the black guys, they love it. I'm exotic, the other. But would they really bring me home to their mother? And my gran wanted me with someone Jewish. In my heart, I always knew this, but would never end up with a Jewish man. I always took a stand to be embodied in the truest attraction I felt, no matter the blows I was dealt, hit with the belt of conditioned guilt, social expectation, perpetuation of separation, just a wounded reiteration of the same pain that started this whole color game. My whole life feeling like a Capulet, a star-crossed lover doomed to death. Am I allowed to love yet, or sentenced like Romeo and Juliet? I walk in the club and get side eyes like, oh, look, it's that white girl that likes black guys. In black, I find beauty and feel it's my duty to clear up this mutiny while shaking my big white booty. Like, yeah, I'm here and I like black guys. Not to mention Korean and Asian, Indian and, yes, even Caucasian. I see beyond color lines. It's never really made sense while I see its ultimate relevance for bringing us healing, the fire of transmutation clearing, new eyes for seeing the truth beyond the color, religion, race, to realize we're all really from the same place, source, God, universe, that ineffable space beyond the bodies that make up this human race. Yes, I said human race, not white race, black race, yellow or brown, but human race. Now that's profound. It's a race to the finish. Come on, guys, it's time that we get this. We all make it or none. Let's get to the essence where our rivers run as one. So the one that we are and the pain not alone, the Holocaust and slavery both touch close to the bone. To all of those I equally call home. And that includes you. You're home to me. We're connected beyond the lines of fear's negativity. I'm Jewish oppressed, so I feel your drama. Listen, I've been through a similar trauma, but I turn trauma to beauty and know it's my duty to see through the fear and claim it's time for unity. Unity, a novel concept, to share without fear from the tears our ancestors wept. And it's our responsibility to clear the fear-based programming, the protections and misdirection that perpetuate the same separation that initiated this whole thing. In his eyes, I see the keys to unity. In the touch of his skin, I remember the portal within, to the place we're both whole and all we see is one soul inside our skin. His heart, his spirit, his light is bright, and he loves me with every ounce of his might. He sees me, he feels me, he says that he needs me, he loves me, worships me. I've never felt anything so steady. And the way he shows up always fills up my cup with the presence of his spirit. And when he buys a ring, wants to marry me, will I be surrounded by my own family? Now that's a cold reality. But it's one I don't live in anymore. Because together we've opened love's unconditional door. So I stand in reverence, celebration galore, wondering what magic this life's got in store. For a love so real, a love so true, a love that sticks through lifetimes like your favorite superglue. He's a king. I'm devoted. Our love a demonstration of union, I know this. And the way he moves, moves mountains inside. So fuck yeah, that's right. I'm a white girl who loves black guys.
It's so good. It's so good. Wow. What's so cool for me. What's so cool for me in that is to have you read me the first one you ever wrote. Mm-hmm. And then I go away for a month and I come back and you've written this one, which I can just see so much evolution even in rhyme schemes and delivery and just the power and the confidence you have while actually saying it. I know you were nervous, but the actual confidence with which you delivered it, like, oh, this is what I do, is so cool to see.
Thank you.
Wow, congratulations. It's a beautiful piece.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. It means a lot coming from you. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, so like that topic is something
goes deep.
That it goes really deep because I mean, you even started the Jaguar Collective. You want to talk about what that is, because there's a lot of this in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Jaguar Collective is a multiracial ceremonial council series, which is a coming together of thought leaders from various backgrounds, various ages, various religions, who are coming together to unpack the trauma, unpack the pain that we have been through individually and collectively, and be the voice for the pain while uniting in one shared intention, which is to see more unity actualized on this planet and to be the demonstration of what that can look like, to be the demonstration of what's possible. So once a month, we come together and we live stream these multiracial council series where we sit with the difficult conversations and demonstrate what it looks like to not only share, give our pain a voice from a place of ownership and responsibility, but also demonstrate what it looks like to really fully see and hear and receive one another. So, you know, we're in the unfolding. You know, one thing that came through after the first council was that, you know, we're in the process of trusting. We're building trust with one another. We're in the process of trusting, and we're trusting in the process. And we've realized that it's such a deep reservoir of trauma that's being held in the collective, that creates and perpetuates the separation story, that it's going to take time to really, you know, unpack this and make ripples in the collective. And we're willing to be patient and active with that process. We also realize that, you know, we're in the tension with intention. You know, at this point we're grazing the surface. We're just crossing the surface of, as we're building the trust, you know, we become more and more willing to share the depth of our pain and our wounding and how we still see separation manifesting itself in our day-to-day reality now, like just really getting present to what's like, what's real, what's really happening, and where are we seeing imbalances still in the collective expressing themselves, whether it's due to, you know, sex, race, religion, however, culture, however it's presenting itself, you know, and just giving us, creating a space for those conversations to be had, and also creating a space for people in the community to share their voices about how separation is touching their lives, and really start to allow the potential for co-creation to happen. You know, we have a lot of really powerful creators and artists that are in the space that are part of the council. And I see an opportunity for us to demonstrate what it looks like on this foundation of trust to create together. What does it look like when we share our gifts, when we create an experiences together where we're freely sharing the gifts of our cultures, of our tribe, of our ancestors, bringing them together and alchemizing them and creating something unique that can be presented, whether it's through spoken word pieces, performances, experiences, where it's a coming together of all of our gifts. And we invite all the different communities to come together live to actually share in one space together. We see that happening in small ways, and here we start to feel a larger impact potential.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. I have obviously my dad's from the Philippines, mm-hmm. and my mom is a Caucasian woman born in the United States, who my grandfather is Jewish, so mm-hmm. Ashkenazi mm-hmm. Jew in my lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny, you know, using Jewish as a minority, yeah. in that way, mm-hmm. I'm like 77% or something, based on 23andMe, of a minority, mm-hmm. and the rest of them falling. I love how they get categorized into the majority or whatever, mm-hmm. just because they're white, mm-hmm. or if like Irish or Scottish or whatever, all these different blends. And yet so many people, when they look at me, or mm-hmm. when they, specifically when they want to project at me that somehow I haven't, like I don't understand, or mm-hmm. I don't, haven't earned the right to speak, or I've been born into privilege or whatever it
mm-hmm.
is, I'm always called white, mm-hmm. in those scenarios.
Yeah.
In those scenarios, like, yeah, well, it's easy for you to say as mm-hmm. like a white male, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I actually identify in many ways as a white male. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It would be silly for me to say otherwise. And I grew up, you know, in my extended family with Black, Hispanic, mm-hmm. Korean, mm-hmm. Filipino. Like, mm-hmm. that was my kind of upbringing, was mm-hmm. around so many different types of cultures and mm-hmm. so many different types of people in my actual extended family. And so while I do relate deeply to the conversation of race and how it has shown up in my life, both as a privilege and as something where I've been made fun of for it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like what might be most beneficial for this conversation is for me to kind of play devil's advocate a bit,
mm-hmm.
and ask, because I've been in the inquiry around all subjects from an evolutionary standpoint,
mm-hmm.
and where is that line around preservation of culture,
mm-hmm.
and really honoring mm-hmm. The desire to respect and honor a lineage, mm-hmm. and traditions, and not have, I mean, I can't even think about, like, it's mind blowing to think about how many cultures, mm-hmm. true cultures, and hundreds of thousands, millions of people that existed that are completely gone mm-hmm. from the planet right now, mm-hmm. that we don't even know existed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is an understanding that I have about people being able to maintain their culture,
mm-hmm.
versus this integration mm-hmm. of like unity.
Yeah.
And where does that fall for you?
Yeah. So I feel exactly what you're saying. And what comes to me immediately is a sovereign unity. Is how important it is for us to celebrate and support everyone, every culture and every race in its most sovereign, empowered, full expression. So in many cases, what I'm feeling is that there gets to be a rebuilding up of cultures and races that have been discriminated against or taken from, or feel that there's an imbalance, whether it's, you know, in the distribution of resources and things like that. So how do we bring first the back into balance, the distribution of resources, and back into balance the feeling of equality and the feeling of empowerment to each culture and each race, so we support each other in our sovereign empowerment and in the celebration of the culture and the gifts that have been born of these cultures specifically. The vision that I have is that, you know, we all support one another in coming into the most empowered and sovereign place, and then from there we bridge the gap and come into a space of sovereign unity where we're unified in that the sovereignty, these traditions are birthed from our culture, does not come from a place of perpetuating more separation, like this is birthed from our culture and it's not safe to share it with you, or it's not safe for you to play the djembe or sit in a teepee because our cultures have been taken from in the past, but rather we feel that our culture has been empowered by you, and that there's a celebration and an appreciation and an honoring of the traditions that have been birthed from that culture. And then the sharing of the gifts and the traditions come more from a place of like wow, like I want to bridge this gap, and I want to share the, you know, the medicine and the foods and the gifts that we have as one human family that have been birthed from this place of origin together. And then what happens are when we're stronger together. But first, that strength gets to come from strength within each individual space.
And where is that, the line between appreciation and appropriation?
Right. So that's, I mean, that conversation has been so alive lately. And, you know, I'm just newly getting introduced to it. And, you know, our sister Blue introduced that concept to me, you know, where's the line between appropriation and appreciation, right? And, you know, appropriation feels to me, this is my interpretation of it, it's the taking of traditions without actually understanding and learning and honoring that culture, without really learning from them what that's about, understanding it very, very deeply. But when you move into appreciation, you're coming from a place of listening and learning and honoring. It's like an energy of reverence.
But from what I heard you say, there is there a need to know the history in order to be able to be honoring of it? Because, for example, right?
I think many people would say that there is a need to know the history. My personal feeling, and this is where I'm at in my journey right now, is that I don't feel that I need to know the entire history of something in order to be in a deep honoring and appreciation of it. I think that there's, I don't think we need to be in a black or white energy around learning, like what does learning the entire history of something mean? There's an energy of learning and understanding and honoring and knowing where the thing that you're working with comes from, whether it's a drum that comes from the Shipibo tradition or a teepee that comes from the Native American tradition. I think using any of these gifts, these things that have been born of other cultures without an understanding of where they come from, feels like appropriation. It feels like a taking without honoring. It's like without acknowledgement. But when there's a desire for understanding, and that can look like, yes, learning the whole history. It can also look like reaching out to a teacher or a guide or a shaman from that way and having a desire to know and to understand what this is about, and also honoring that and acknowledging that and speaking into that anytime that you're working with that medicine or that gift or whatever it is that's coming from that particular world or tradition. I'm an advocate for the sharing. Well, you know, for the sharing of our gifts, but I'm not an advocate for the taking. and for the lack of appreciation. So I think in order to create sharing, there has to be a true honoring, a true reverence, and a true appreciation. Now, the definition of that, it can look like learning the whole history, but I don't necessarily know that you have to do that. I'm in a humble learning myself of what it means.
Well, I also wonder though, because there's so have you heard the term like snowflake generation?
Do you know what that means?
So snowflake being like just sensitive about everything, mm-hmm. like offended by absolutely everything, right? Yeah. And that's what there's a lot of people who talk about how let's say millennials right now were raised with this like everyone gets a trophy mentality, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. eighth place gets a participation trophy mm-hmm. or whatever, and this wanting to coddle people and that coddling of people leading to what you're seeing now, which is being offended by literally everything. Mm-hmm. Now, where I'm curious about is the culture is such a hot button topic, right? But if we were to remove culture from it, and look at things like when I listen to music and I listen to a new style of music, like I'm really into this kind of, I don't know what it's called. It's like Latin EDM. It's like reggaeton, like thing that's happening right now that's really exploding that is so cool. I don't know the history of that music. The hip hop that I listen to, I don't know the history of those artists necessarily. I know some history of hip hop, right?
Of course.
I don't know a lot of it. Do I? And so when I think about music and the music that I appreciate most deeply, I have no idea really where those roots come from. I don't feel in any way that I'm appropriating that music. I feel like I'm appreciating that music.
I feel you.
Now, when I add culture to it and it's like, okay, well, are you upset that I'm playing a djembe, let's say, without knowing necessarily where a djembe comes from? Well, if I looked at like a child, if you saw a child that was just like playing a djembe and was like loving it, in no way am I like, you're appropriating that. You need to learn the history of that instrument. In my way, I'm like, no, enjoy the instrument, play it, love it. And great. If at some point you desire to learn the history of that, that would be awesome. I see it almost like, because this has happened to me since my poem went viral. So many people reposting that poem. And many of them taking it off the internet and then posting it and not crediting me for the work. And feeling like, okay, it's cool to be able to credit someone for what it got to. And they don't need to know my history. They don't need to know like why I wrote it or where I come from. Like, I don't feel like they're appropriating my work in that. And so I'm curious how much of that is just because it's cultural versus, and we're being just like overly sensitive maybe to it.
Yeah, I feel that. And I feel that there's, you know, one thing I do want to draw attention to, which you began to point to in the innocence of the child, is oftentimes, you know, the innocence of someone who might actually have no idea that, you know, playing the djembe or listening to the hip hop, you know, or posting something without the credit, would create an offense, right? And so how do we educate one another about what really feels important? And I think there's an openness to that, and that's what we get to create in the Jaguar Collective as well, is an opportunity to transmit the message around what's important. For example, in the recent council, my very dear sister Siana, who's, you know, a beautiful African American woman, initiated priestess, she was sharing about how it feels for her when she enters a space and sees everyone playing the djembes, and that, you know, oftentimes there's no acknowledgement given. And I, in that moment, realized I had no idea that that was coming up for her when she was coming into spaces. And I am actively learning how to play the djembe, and it's a beautiful instrument, and it's so primal and tribal, and it feels so good genuinely in my body. And so I'm going to continue to learn how to play that instrument with my prayers, with the blessing of the people that I love the most that are in my life, you know? And what I learned is that there was an opportunity for me there to appreciate more where the djembe comes from and what it's about. And she shared with us that, you know, on the plantation, the djembe was used for, you know, men and women to locate each other and feel where and know where they were at, you know, and that there's actually initiations that are required in order to learn to play the djembe in African culture. And so what she was expressing and what I heard was that, you know, just having the simple like acknowledgement and appreciation present in your system when you're, you know, when I'm playing the djembe, I have an increased appreciation for where it comes from and the culture that birthed it. So when I'm playing it, it actually adds to my experience with it.
But also on the other side of that, she's walking into these spaces, seeing these people play it, and she's having this come up for her. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't actually even know if those people know the history of the djembe. They might mm-hmm. know the mm-hmm. history of the djembe. It's mm-hmm. impossible for me to tell mm-hmm. when you're playing the djembe mm-hmm. whether you know that history or not. And right. so having that come up for me mm-hmm. is a response that is indicative of it not actually being necessarily about whether you know it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you knowing it or not is not the thing that triggers me. The thing that triggers me is walking into the space and assuming no one does mm-hmm. or having something else underneath that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I'm speaking to mm-hmm. is what is underneath all of it? Mm-hmm. Really, what's underneath all of it? Because to walk into that space and see people playing the djembe or see people with the hair like mm-hmm. like blue, mm-hmm. whatever, locks. Like and being like, and immediately having something come up mm-hmm. without actually knowing, like mm-hmm. maybe there was a blessing, maybe you were trained to play the djembe by someone mm-hmm. initiate, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And that yeah. so what is underneath all of it mm-hmm. really?
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge question, right? So I think, you know, there's the acknowledgement of the innocence and the acknowledgement of the information that's available and the conversations that get to be had to start to bridge the gap. What's underneath all of it, you know, we can go all the way back to the, you know, the original wound of separation if we want to go all the way back, and the original wound of separation and the fear. When I really feel into that, the fear that is induced when we experience as, you know, beings in form, which the nature of being in form is that we inherently then experience ourselves as separate. And so the fear that then perpetuated and from the human ego then created situations where trauma was imposed on other beings that then creates these ripple effects and resentments and judgments and fear and anger that's being held that's then perpetuating the same separation that created the original wound. It's the wound of separation that's being held in the collective consciousness of humanity.
Well, isn't the need to be identified for the uniqueness and the history in a way contributing to the separation?
That's what I'm speaking to. Yeah. You know, it is contributing, but that need to be identified for the culture, I think, is it's amplified by the trauma that's been imposed on that particular culture.
But is giving into it then
Yes, and that's why, yes,
right,
100%. I think it is. Mm-hmm. And so how, that's the question that we're working into, is how do we actually create a space where we get to acknowledge the pain and the anger and the upset that's still being held while also moving into a space of forgiveness and letting go and unity? Like, how does that bridge actually get built?
Yeah. And I think that the thing that I'm always looking at, because I believe that we're just living in a world in which people are drawing lines. They're saying, this is where it matters to me and this is where it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, there's no empirical around it. What is mm-hmm. appropriation versus appreciation? For each individual, they're drawing a line for themselves of what feels like it's appropriation, what feels like it's appreciation. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at, we have microphones in our hands. Like, mm-hmm. what's the history of the microphone? Who invented mm-hmm. the microphone? Who do we give credit to for inventing this microphone?
I feel you.
The laptop, the mm-hmm. tea that we're drinking, where's that from? What, mm-hmm. what land is that from? Mm-hmm. Who, like, all of those things, at a certain point, we're saying this matters or this doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And where I have been sitting in my own just analysis of it is what are the topics that seem to be the hot button issues? Because no one is walking in here and looking at us using microphones and mm-hmm. projecting on, they don't know the history of them, that mm-hmm. microphone. Mm-hmm. They don't know that mm-hmm. and being upset about it. Mm-hmm. So for someone to have that experience around a djembe means mm-hmm. like you didn't invent the djembe. Mm-hmm. That is not you. That's not being credited. So you're identifying mm-hmm. as somebody who's been wronged. And like, mm-hmm. that's the thing.
The hot button is the culture differentials, mm-hmm. the race differentials. It's the, you know, the identity structures that we buy into that we believe define us as human beings and the ancestral lines that are connected to that and the stories that we've learned and feel in our through that. And so the best way that I can relate to it in terms of how I'd like to be the invitation for healing to occur, where we can come into a space where we walk into a room, which is the high vision, and there's, you know, a white person playing a djembe, and it's like, fuck yeah, brother, get it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, that's the vision, right? And the way that I can connect into that personally is when I rewind the script and feel into the energetics of the Holocaust, which is where I can connect into a genocide, a trauma through my ancestral line, and then the residual trauma ball effect that I felt in my own life and the separation I experienced with my own family, who were, from my perspective, perpetuating the same separation that was imposed upon us, right? Like, from, you know, Jewish people are bad and, you know, white German people are good, so let's kill all the Jewish people. And then now we have Jewish people that are saying, oh, you have to marry Jewish people and the other people are bad because they might kill us and you need to stay safe here. So mm-hmm. what I've done is that when I really rewind that, I can see and understand very clearly the fear that's at play there and have compassion for that and understand that I actually don't need to perpetuate that same separation story in order to protect myself or my people. And when I've cleared that out, I've actually developed a deeper relationship for my Jewish lineage and for my ancestors and for the Hebrew language and for the preciousness of it when the fear is actually cleared from the field. And mm-hmm. so how do we move into the pure preciousness and the celebration, where the same thing in African culture, how do we move into the pure preciousness and celebration of like, this djembe came from our culture. And so it's like a celebration to see someone else playing it. Celebration to see someone writing in Hebrew, celebration to see tribal markers on people's bodies in Hebrew letters, like any bodies, right? Because I've come from a place of forgiveness and compassion, and no longer in a place of, I'm no longer perpetuating protection of my culture and my lineage, which ultimately subconsciously perpetuates the separation still, which is why one might be upset to see, you know, Hebrew letters being written when it's like, oh, this person's not Jewish and they don't understand where this is coming from and why are they using the tribal markers? You know what I mean? Or same thing, the body markings are also considered at times cultural appropriation from the African culture. But in tribal markings, they write in Hebrew letters. For me, it feels like a celebration. So I'm looking for the switch to switch it from the feeling of walking into a room and feeling like something's being taken, which to me comes from the protection, which also comes from not feeling completely acknowledged and supported. Mm-hmm. You know, and how do we switch it into celebration, which doesn't mean that culture's gifts and lineage dissolve into one like unified field. It means that they're celebrated and they're being celebrated by, rather than walking into a space and feeling like, oh, I need to protect my lineage or my ancestors, and this is being taken, and why am I not being acknowledged again? To me, that's coming from, it's voicing the wound, and that's what the space for the Jaguar Collective is. The wound gets to be voiced, the pain gets to be voiced. It's real, we can't ignore it. It's there. It's the thing that's creating the experience of walking into a room and feeling like offended that someone is you know, playing a djembe and not acknowledging it. So we need to voice that. We need to share that, and we need to hear each other
and know what we're seeking, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to say, yeah, and it's not being acknowledged. Like, what is the thing actually feel good? Like, mm-hmm. what sort of, like, every time I play the djembe, do mm-hmm. I finish and be like, I just want to say thank you to this? Like, what is the thing that would actually feel like it satisfies that thing?
Right.
And recognizing that it goes really far, because right. I can play that scenario out where it's like, okay, well, I want to be recognized for this culture and I want people to know the thing. And then I go into, you referenced the Holocaust, having the star placed on people, uh-huh. right? Mm-hmm. So now I know your culture. Like mm-hmm. now I know that the mm-hmm. thing. And so I'm curious, like going in the far opposite direction, like how do you view then white nationalists in across the globe, specifically in the United States? Mm-hmm. So how is your view on that?
Like, is that like white supremacist?
It's energy? Different. It's different than white supremacist, okay, because a white supremacist would be speaking from a place of white people being supreme and mm-hmm. being mm-hmm. Better than in a mm-hmm. hierarchical sense. But white nationalist being lumped in with white supremacy, but people who are essentially fighting for white culture, mm-hmm. white rights. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they have very much been labeled as the alt-right, and they are often called white supremacists. Mm-hmm. But there is a white nationalist movement.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what your thoughts are, because that is they are labeled as racist, essentially, mm-hmm. neo-Nazis mm-hmm. and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
So when I feel what I'm hearing and I'm learning what white nationalists are like live right now, right? So white supremacists, when I feel that and see that, I feel, I see fear and I see control. I see fear expressing as control and separation. When I feel what I'm hearing you say about white nationalists is fighting for white rights, like, in reaction to, this is my continuation of that, in reaction to perhaps like the like, you know, guilt or shame that white people might feel around being, you know, the perceived oppressor. Is that what's being fought against in white nationalism?
I would
that's a thing
hesitant
that we get to look at as well.
Yeah, and
that,
I'd be hesitant to like speak on behalf of white nationalists. I haven't dove deep
into it.
I feel like I know enough uh-huh. to speak to what we're seeing mm-hmm. is, so something, for example, affirmative action, mm-hmm. right? Where literally there's a number of minority hirings that need to be done. Mm-hmm. We're seeing with the white nationalists, they would say, well, what about white rights? Mm-hmm. What about, that's a in the same vein of doing that, you're getting a discrimination against mm-hmm. whites. And this is, by the way, I'm playing devil's advocate here mm-hmm. because I can go on down this in a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. And one thing that is not often spoken about, and I find interesting, is the label of racist mm-hmm. and white supremacist that is thrown on people who are literally doing basically a similar thing to what cultures who are trying to preserve their culture are doing with like white culture mm-hmm. and saying, well, like, what about this and what about uh-huh. this? But when it's taken from the white vantage point, it's been very often labeled in a malicious way, which is very interesting.
Yeah,
and I didn't know if there was anyone speaking on behalf of white mm-hmm. nationalism, white mm-hmm. rights in the Jaguar Collective.
Yeah, I mean,
for
there's
example.
Several white people in the Jaguar Collective that are all driven by the intention of unity. And so, honestly, what I'm feeling in all of this is that I just want to pop the whole thing. I oh my God, like all of these divisive sex groups that are, you know, and I understand it's all like when I feel the energetics, it's like a reaction. It's like reactions to pressure in different directions that are all reactions to the same fear that created the whole thing. And so, you know, I, the Jaguar Collective, what I come back to every single time is the intention for unity. I don't endorse, or I don't feel like I'm on board with anything that is like actively fighting for the rights of this one group only. And I know that there are imbalances that I see culturally that are still happening, and there are separations that are still being perpetuated and judgments that are still being perpetuated all the way around, whether it's, you know, people in the white community feeling like they want to connect, but on eggshells or careful, or feeling, you know, the guilt or the shame is expressing as carefulness or eggshells, or a reaction to affirmative action, creating a white nationalist group where there's a fighting for white people's rights. It's the same energy of groups banding together based on race or culture or sameness in order to stand for the rights of their people. And I don't identify with their people, with our people only. I identify, and I have always identified, I've never seen color as, or race or religion as, a separative identity structure. I don't get it. It doesn't land for me. And I see all the wounding and trauma that's been created for it from it. So I think that I'm not about the bypass either. I think we've got to give a voice to the pain that is still present and the imbalances that are still actually happening, while coming together with the intention of recognizing that we are all human beings and that we're all one human family. And I don't relate to any group that is strongly differentiating themselves from anyone else. I relate to the healing and the respect that's desired, and the honoring of culture. I'm like, yes to that.
Do you feel like that's a privilege, though? The fact that you do not relate to the I'm a part of this.
How could that be a privilege for me when I spent the majority of my life experiencing heavy discrimination and judgment, not only from the white community, the black community, but also from my own family, from their own innocence and their own pain and their own fear? I don't feel like I've been untouched as a white Jewish woman who's dated interracially and been deeply in love most of my life with black men. I'd have not been untouched by the separation story. Well, so I could easily identify in one of these, you know, strong stances. And I'm a demonstration of what it looks like to identify with coming together. And that's why I brought a multiracial council together, to all hear each other and hear what's true and what's present for one another. We can include a white nationalist in that group to voice that, because we all are human beings and we get to voice what's present for us and come together and share what is true. And but it's not a debate. It's not to fight with one another. So that person would get to come in if it's true for them, that they can see that unity and a higher level of unity is possible, and that we can see the innocence in one another. I believe that that's possible.
I think that I believe it as well, by the way. And I think that as I continue to play devil's advocate.
Yeah, I'm like, Adam,
it's like, don't be mad at me. I'm just asking questions.
Yeah.
But I do think that.
Yeah, I feel strongly
about
it.
Well, I think that where privilege comes in, what the argument would be made for privilege coming in is choice. Mm-hmm. And we can say, like, you can't control who you fall in love with. Mm-hmm. And you have a choice about who you date, as opposed to the person who leaves the house and the color of their skin is something where they're now they get to be aware that they are perceived differently and they need to act differently and they need to be on certain behavior around certain people.
Totally.
And don't have your hoodie up when you're walking at night. You know, like,
hell,
there are things that they don't have choice about because of color of skin.
I get that.
And or you could we could go with sexual orientation, right?
Yep.
Being born gay.
Yeah.
And so when I say the word privilege, I think that the argument would be made that the privilege comes in being able to have the choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why I'm creating a space for the people who feel that they have not had a choice and have been discriminated against for just being who they are to have a voice. That's what it's about. I'm not on a candy cloud saying, hey, let's just all be one and forget that there's any pain or trauma.
No, you're from martial arts. You're like, let's fight it out. Let's fight it out and shake hands afterwards.
Let's bring it forward. Yeah. You know, like, I want to hear those stories. I want to understand that. And I've lived it firsthand just in being in deep interracial relationships. So I'm not hiding it when I'm out in the world, you know, out in the world in Texas. An example I have that's present right now is my boyfriend Ed at Rice University, all the way through college, we experienced a lot of racism and discrimination. But one example is, we were driving, we got a speeding ticket, and the white officer didn't like that there was this black man is dating a white woman, and he got arrested. And I remember sleeping in the jail overnight, just waiting for him to get out for a speeding ticket. And so I want to hear these stories. I want there to be a platform for the pain and the that to have a voice and to be shared, so that we can start to come closer to a solution, and also be a space to really hear that, to hear and what it feels like to have that experience. Because I you're right. I don't walk out of the house as a white woman, and I can. I actually don't feel like there's a hiding in that, but there's a, it's not an overt experience that I have just going to the grocery store. And I really hear from my, you know, African American brothers and sisters that that's an experience that they have, where they feel like, even if I put a hoodie up in the store, like I'm being followed, like I'm not being trusted just for the color of my skin. You know, and I feel like I want to be the space for that. I want to be the space to hear that. We have to start somewhere. There can just be a holding of that truth, that there's a discrimination, there's a separation, there's an imbalance that's occurring, and there is, you know. And so we can just keep sitting in that and being in our separative factions and voicing it within the separative factions, or having panel discussions about race. But no, I want to create a space where we're actually deep in the healing, and we can voice the upset and voice the imbalance while having a solutions oriented approach. And whether that turns into a healing mat experience in a ceremonial container where we're actually holding space for each other to move through what that feels like, and ultimately connect human to human again and hear from one another what's important to you from me, what's important to me from you, and really honor that and be the demonstration of what it looks like to honor one another in that. That's where we start to see some change happening. And I know that from the response of the first council, there's been such an influx of people reaching out, just wanting to share their stories, just wanting to be heard, just wanting to be seen and listened to and acknowledged that that is their experience, you know, walking out of the house and feeling like they're being misperceived or judged. You know, and so we get to create a platform and a space for people to share their voice and actually be heard and have this, you know, unfolding process that's geared towards a solution. And the truth is, we don't know what that looks like yet, but we know we can take a step and then take another step and then another one, you know. And so that's my intention. And it touches a very, very deep place in my heart, because I do know what it feels like to be judged and feel like love is being taken from you, and be misperceived just for being yourself. I do know what that feels like. And I do know what the trauma of ancestral wounding through the Holocaust, I do know what that feels like in my body, you know, and I know what protection feels like in my body. And so I just want to be a space to hear how that feels for everyone else, and to come together to try to find a solution together. You know, and we get to be in the listening. It's not something that can be forced at all. That's what I learned really in the first council, is that we get to really be in an organic unfolding of listening, and just trust that the next step is going to present itself just by hearing one another.
And so it is. Yeah. That's great. I fully agree. It's we don't know the answers. We don't know where it's going. Mm. And at the end of the day, we can just choose to sit and be in what is, mm-hmm. or all come to an agreement that, hey, we'd like to see something shift. So at least let's at least take a step.
That's it.
And the Jaguar Collective sounds like a beautiful step in that direction. Mm-hmm. I thank you and honor you for taking that on. And I'd love for you to let people know how they can like find out about this and more about what you're doing, because it's all amazing.
Yeah. So you can find out about the Jaguar Collective at the Jaguar Collective on Instagram. Our next council will be live streamed from the Instagram page on July 10th. So you can tune in there, and please share your stories, send in your message. We want to hear your voice and share it. And I also offer something once a month if you're based in LA, called the Liberation Dojo, which is an invitation to identify where your edges are at and face off with your fears in real time. So it's a powerful ceremonial experience if you want to have a live expansion.
Am I here for the next one?
Are you here June 27th?
No.
Oh, darn it. We'd love to have you.
I don't get to be on the Jaguar Collective. I don't get to do anything.
Well, you never know. We can definitely loop you in.
Thank you so much for being here and taking the deep dive with me and letting me play devil's advocate, because I think that at the end of the day, like, it was uncomfortable for me to ask those questions, right?
And take that stance.
Because in many ways, in our circle, it's way easier for it to be like, oh, yeah, unity, blah, blah. It's like, well, let's also talk about the white nationalists who are being, like, attacked for being racist when they're doing a very similar thing.
Yeah.
But because of white privilege, that it's not being valued. And, like, all of these conversations get to be had. Mm-hmm. And for everyone listening, I really... thank you for sitting in the conversation with us. And I encourage you to create safe spaces for you to have these conversations with the ones that you love as well. Mm-hmm. And you can learn more about how that's being done by observing groups like the Jaguar Collective and other spaces where those conversations are being had in a healthy way with beautiful intention. So everyone, I want to remind you that always, in always, you are seen. You are heard.